today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
To get my very first wedding, I guess destination wedding, what I did was offered completely free wedding photography for a very specific couple, because at that point, like, I don't have any kind of portfolio for destination work. I don't have any experience. I don't have any proof that I can even do destination work, right? So it's a huge risk for a couple to take that on, right? So my thought process was, if I offered for free, then that's a really huge advantage, and kind of, I guess, what would you call bait, I guess, you know, to get right. them to hire me, right?
Bait.
That's what I did, is I offered it completely for free. And in exchange, I would have all of that, you know, work to use for my portfolio and stuff like that.
Raymond here from the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, I'm talking to a destination wedding photographer who's going to tell you why destination wedding photography might not be right for you. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast with Raymond Hatfield, the podcast dedicated to interviewing world-class photographers to ask them the questions you want answered. Whether you want to be the world's best wedding photographer, family photographer, pet photographer, or you just want to take better photos of your kids growing up, we will get you to start taking better photos today. Here with you as always, husband, father, home brewer, LA Dodger fan, and award-winning Indianapolis wedding photographer, Raymond Hatfield.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to the podcast, Beginner Photography Podcast, as always. I am Raymond. Really excited for today's episode. It is a good one. Like I mentioned, I'm talking to a destination wedding photographer, right? Like, this is what you guys have lots of questions about. You guys have been asking me tons of questions about destination wedding photography, how you get into it, how glamorous it must be. So today I took care of that for you. I reached out to a good friend of mine who's a destination wedding photographer, and I got all of your questions answered, and I know you guys are going to get a ton of value from it. Last week, I featured a review from one of our listeners from Amazon, or not, here we go, I'm on this Amazon kick, from iTunes, and man, it completely made her day. Amber, if you're listening again, right on. She reached out on Instagram and was like, I was driving home and oh my God, I heard my name. It was so incredible. So I love hearing that. That is so cool. Because honestly, like, I'm trying to build this community together, and this is such a fun way to do it. So today I'm going to talk about another review that a listener left on iTunes. And guys, remember, if you leave a review on iTunes, it really helps the podcast be found to other listeners. And when we have a large group of people who listen to the podcast, that can really help us get larger guests to answer more of your questions. So leaving a review really does help. So today's review is by Vince O. He says he left us another 5-star review. Again, that's 2 for 2 5-star reviews that I've talked about back to back, meaning that he could not have given us any more stars if he wanted to, because he maxed out at 5 stars. That's how good he thinks the podcast is. He says, I've only been listening to one podcast, that's episode 21, but I've played it twice now because I liked it that much. I'm looking forward to hearing more from the Beginner Photography Podcast. Thanks, guys. No, thank you, Vince. You rock. Thank you so much for leaving that review. I know that you took time out of your day to do so, and once again, I thank you for doing that. Okay, that's enough. We're way too deep into this. We need to get into this episode right now. It is a long one, so buckle in, get ready. You guys are going to learn a ton. Let's get into it right now with Matt Druin. In the past few months, today's guest has become a friend of mine. He is a destination wedding photographer, which is the type of photographer that other wedding photographers wish that they could be. Today, he took time out of his busy schedule of hand-washing his entire fleet of private jets to talk to us. We have Atlanta-based wedding destination wedding photographer Matt Druin. Matt, do you have a fleet of private jets as a destination wedding photographer?
No, not exactly.
No, so it's okay. Yeah, that's one of the things that I really want to get into today, is that the reason why I had you on is because I've gotten a lot of questions from listeners who are just like mystified by destination wedding photography. They believe that it's like this unattainable lifestyle of just luxury and opulence, I guess. So I kind of want to talk all about that with you because obviously you have firsthand experience. You know what you're talking about. You're the man to do it. So to start off, why don't you tell us how you got into photography, like how long ago it was, and kind of your roots into how you got here?
So photography itself, honestly, was a total accident. And I got into it in 2011, and that's when I got my first camera. And I honestly only got the camera because I was in school at the time, and we needed a camera to take photos of these art projects we were working on. So I traded a toolbox on Craigslist for this camera. And I'm just a huge tech nerd, so of course I loved all the buttons and everything, and started taking some photos of my dogs and some squirrels, and then that moved on to like my friends and then friends of friends. And my first paid job was $20 and a pack of gum, and I just thought that was amazing. And I came home about 2 weeks later and told my wife I was gonna quit school, I was gonna quit my job and just be a full-time photographer, because I was just, I guess, very naive at the time about how it all worked and how I'd make money from it. So she basically told me just to wait, you know, maybe a year or so and just get better and maybe build the business up a little bit before doing all that. But I came home 2 weeks later with no job and no school and had to pay bills.
Jeez, just jumped right on into it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at that time, I didn't have kids and we really had no responsibilities other than normal bills, you know, and we had a large savings. So I guess it was just kind of set up to be a good opportunity at the time to kind of take the risk, you know.
So I guess my first question is, who negotiated in that extra pack of gum with that first gig?
Honestly, I can't even remember, you know. I want to say it was probably just them, you know, just being funny about it.
That's awesome. I love cool deals like that. Okay, so next question, of course, is why destination weddings?
I got my very first wedding about 3 months after I owned that camera, and that was a total accident too. So I just had a friend that was that knew some people that were getting married, and they had literally no budget at all for a wedding photographer. So they asked me to do it, and of course I told them I had no clue what I was even doing, kind of hoping they would back out, you know. That was kind of what I was thinking, like, yeah, they're not gonna hire me, I don't even know what I'm doing. But yeah, their mom ended up offering me $600 to photograph the wedding, and I took that, and that's how I actually got into weddings. And then the very next year is when I got into destination weddings. So that was, 2012? So at that point, I probably shot about 25 weddings. I shot about 25 weddings my first year. And then, moved right into destination weddings.
Okay, so we're going to get into that right away. How do you go from 0 to 25 in a year?
Just you're cheap.
Okay. Fair enough.
So like, yeah, my first wedding was $600, and then I did my second wedding for $900, and then third one for $1,200, and then I did like weddings probably like 4 through 6 for probably about $1,500, and then just kind of worked my way up. So by the end of the year, I want to say I was around 3,000 by the end of the year. But yeah, that's kind of how I just kind of worked up the scale. And when you're cheaper, you know, you can just take on a lot more weddings.
So how were these people finding you? Was it purely through referrals?
A lot of referrals, and I was really doing anything. So I was putting stuff on like Facebook and Twitter and Craigslist and any way I can get my name and work out there to get somebody to hire me, to pay me. Because at that time, it's like I didn't have a job. I wasn't in school or anything, and we had to make money, you know. So it's just literally doing anything at that point just to really just – not just for the money, but also the experience. So I'm trying to build a portfolio. I'm actually trying to learn how to even use the camera, you know, because at that point I just got that camera, you know, like a few months before that. So I'm still trying to figure out how to even take photos and stuff. So I just looked at it all as a learning experience and to make money, obviously. Yeah.
Crazy. So again, maybe you answered it in there. How did destination weddings come about, and when did you start to focus on that?
So it was the very next year as I really got into destination weddings, and primarily because I grew up traveling my entire life. So both my parents were in the Army. So we traveled around about every 3 to 6 months, you know, just moving to different states and stuff with the Army. And then I graduated high school early and did professional skateboarding for a number of years. So I would travel around and just move to different cities and states all the time just because I was young and I could, you know, and I loved to travel. So as I get older, I still loved traveling. And I still do. So I looked at it as a way for me to be able to kind of keep traveling, because it's really hard for me to, like, I've lived in Atlanta now for about 8 years, which is the longest I lived anywhere. And it's really hard for me to go longer than, you know, 6-8 months without traveling somewhere, you know? So it just seemed like a really good fit for me and what I like to do as far as traveling and stuff goes. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does.
I can't remember.
But next, I want to know we touched upon this a little bit in the intro. What is the hardest part about being a destination wedding photographer? Because like I said, so many people think that it's just nothing but luxury and jet setting and you know, staying at the Ritz. There's got to be some downsides to it.
Yeah, there definitely is quite a few, honestly. And contrary to what like my Instagram and Facebook might make it look like, it's really not that glamorous as it seems. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some glamorous aspects to it that could be kind of nice. Like sometimes if I go to a place that I've never been to or I just really like, I might stay an extra day or two, but then that's costing me money, obviously, out of my own pocket. But at the same time, it's like the travel and everything, it's kind of already been paid for to that point. So I'm really not paying for that much to stay those extra days. So that's kind of a benefit. But for the most part, I mean, it's just a lot more work. It's a lot harder. It's more exhausting. And there's a lot that goes into it, you know, compared to like a local wedding. There's tons of logistics and more planning. And there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong, you know, more so than a local wedding. So I guess there's more stress kind of with that. Like I've had issues with like plane tickets not being right. I book my plane tickets and stuff, and sometimes I get to the gate and there's some crazy issue going on with the planes and stuff, or I've had issues with TSA. I've been stopped and like interrogated by like drug dogs.
Oh geez.
I've had like broken down cars and all that stuff is, I mean, it sucks when that stuff happens to you and you live in your city or your local, you know, to where you live, because it's just easier to get things done. But when you're somewhere you don't know anything or don't know who to contact, you know, it's just, it's a lot harder to get problems fixed. And I guess people probably realize, you know, I'm sure people probably just think a lot of times you just like, yeah, you get booked for these amazing weddings and you just like show up, you shoot this wedding and you go home. But it's not really quite like that.
That makes sense. I mean, there's got to be, downsides to everything, no matter what it is that you choose. I mean, when you have that full-time job, you think that, oh, once I'm like a full-time photographer, that's going to be it. It's going to be incredible. I get to stay at home all day. I can work in my PJs. I get to go to work and there's like cake every day at my job, at weddings and stuff like this. But when you actually get there, you're like, oh, this isn't what I had thought. And then you got to play that, is it still worth it game? Which of course, obviously it's still worth it for you.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely right. I mean, there's so many pros and cons to being self-employed versus having like just a normal job, you know, especially when it comes to like sick days and paid holidays and retirement plans that match and all these great benefits, you know. So, yeah, being self-employed, there's definitely a lot of downsides, but there's a lot of pro sides, too. You know, like now it's like I have a 2.5-year-old son, so it's cool because I can stay home with him a lot. You know, my schedule is really flexible and I can work it around my family life. So that's a nice benefit.
All right. So I reached out to our listeners to get some questions. Cause like I said, a lot of people think that it's destination wedding photography is just completely mysterious and unattainable. So I wanted to know what their biggest, questions were. So are you ready for some of these questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the first one is, why would a couple hire a destination wedding photographer instead of just a local photographer?
And that is a very good question. So I think there's a few different kind of pros and cons and advantages to that. I mean, obviously, if they like went somewhere, let's say they went to Hawaii, right, and they hired a local photographer there, they would know like all the really good spots and how to get into these things and stuff, probably more so than maybe a destination wedding photographer that's never been there. But I think one of the biggest benefits is, for example, like if somebody local to Atlanta were to hire me to go to Hawaii, they can work with me before, during, and after the wedding, as opposed to trying to work with somebody else that lives in Hawaii and they're trying to communicate in different time zones and stuff like that. So I think that's a really good, you know, reason to hire a destination wedding photographer, is because, you know, as we all know, as wedding photographers, there's a lot more work that goes into it than just shooting the wedding. You know, there's the stuff before, there's engagement sessions, there's like logistical stuff, there's all the album stuff and things like that on the back end. So I just think it's easier, you know, probably for them.
Hey Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos. You know, another one of the things that I know that you and I have talked about before, which I wanted you to bring up, but obviously there's a lot that goes into it, is that you've kind of like set up this cool spot to where you are and what you charge to shoot a wedding could still be cheaper than local photographers, depending on where people get married. And you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was going to be my very next thing is, depending on where people live, like say they live in like say LA or New York City, like those places are very high cost of living places. So in return, you know, with that, then wedding photographers in general are going to be more expensive there because they need to make more money in order to live. Where the people that live there could actually hire me for probably half the price than they would somebody there and save money, but they're also getting, you know, quality and everything else that kind of goes into that as well, you know? So like for people that live in those places, yeah, that's one of my biggest kind of target areas is probably like places like Los Angeles and New York City and stuff, just for that reason, because I know I'm cheaper because like my cost of living in Atlanta is way cheaper than it is in New York City or LA or a lot of places like in the Pacific, you know, Northwest and stuff like that. It's just my cost of living is cheaper, you know?
That's crazy. I think that's cool. Especially because it's like, it's kind of thinking out of the box from what I thought destination wedding photography was originally.
Or, you know, too, they can get a lot more variety. You know, like, say, like, if you do live in the Pacific Northwest or out in California and stuff, kind of those sorts of states kind of have their own styles almost, you know, within photography, right? So they kind of have an overall look based on where they live. So if a couple is looking for something different than that, then they could find me, and that might be totally different than those locations, you know, like California usually has a lot of like really light, airy, sunny, natural light photos, you know, and a lot of photographers shoot that way, you know. So if a couple's looking for really dramatic and kind of crazy, unique photos, then that would be me, you know. They can bring me out there and get what they want, you know.
And it's cheaper. Everybody wins. You get to travel. Okay, next question. How do you market yourself if you can't call yourself a X city name wedding photographer?
Very creatively. So I kind of have some strategic things that I do, and it kind of references to guerrilla marketing. I don't know if you've ever heard that term before. But that's pretty much how I run my entire business, and I've done it since day one, basically because when I started, I was poor and had no money for paid marketing. So I've gotten really good at the guerrilla part, right? And that's what I use to market myself as a destination wedding photographer. Is like a lot of times what I'll do is like when I travel, I might stay an extra day or two and I'll do like street photography, or I'll visit certain places that I know are just interesting for me, but also popular searches that people do, you know, for like museums and things like that. And I'll visit these places, I photograph them, and then I'll actually write a whole separate blog post on that travel kind of experience, as well as obviously, you know, the engagement session. And pretty much every couple will do an engagement session. So I say, let's take New York, for example. Like, so I'll go to New York City, I'll shoot their engagement session, I'll blog their engagement session, then I'll usually stay an extra day, do some street photography or whatever else while I'm there, and then that becomes a whole separate blog post. So now there's two for New York City, right? And then I'll do their wedding, and then I'll do the exact same thing. I'll stay there an extra day or two and do some other, like, stuff for me personally, and then there's another two blog posts for New York City. So I'm continuously marketing for New York City that way, right? Same thing, like pretty much anywhere I travel, I'll do the exact same thing, unless it's just some boring random city that nobody's even heard of. Then there's no reason to really do that, you know? But yeah, so pretty much anywhere that I want to continuously market to, that's kind of how I'm doing it. Or I'm getting ready to go to Hawaii, you know, for a wedding in April, and I'm doing the exact same thing. So I'm going there. I'm actually staying there for pretty much an entire week. I'm photographing the wedding for a day, and then we're doing a portrait session the next day, just around the island and stuff. But the rest of the time I'm there, I'm going to be documenting all kinds of stuff and doing my own kind of adventures and stuff like that for more blog content. And then I'll also sometimes too, I try to set up additional like portrait sessions and stuff while I'm at these places. So I might hop in like Model Mayhem or something, or try to find some like local models, or just even give away free shoots just to get content to blog about. And that way I can kind of continuously keep marketing to these places, kind of like I was if I was living there, right?
Yeah. So what do you do? So in these blog posts from these other locations, do you say, I guess what sort of search terms do you go for? Is there like a, you know, do you say that you're a Hawaii wedding photographer or something like that? Or do you say that you're a Hawaii destination wedding photographer?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. So basically the same way you would market yourself in your local market as far as like SEO and search goes, I'm doing the exact same thing for these locations. But obviously I don't live there. But once they kind of get to my site and they look at my work, they realize right away that I'm a destination wedding photographer. And it, I guess it really doesn't matter at that point.
Right. Yeah, yeah, makes sense. Cool. Okay. So next question. I have a hard enough time keeping track of my current local clients. With the amount of travel that you do, how do you have the time to keep up with your clients? So obviously travel cuts into the amount of time that you have available to work on your business. How do you keep up with everything?
A lot of it's just really good organization and really good workflows and a really good client management system. So I use Sprout Studio, which is kind of an all-in-one system. So it not only manages my clients, but it does invoicing, it does emails, it does photo galleries, it does wall art design and presentations. I mean, it just does a ton of stuff, you know? So I use that as one of my key tools. And then I'm also doing, you know, a lot of good communication through email and Skype and FaceTime and stuff like that with my clients. And then also I just don't take a whole lot of weddings, you know. I only shoot a max 20 weddings a year, and I do that intentionally, primarily to ensure each client is getting a high level of service, you know, that they deserve and that they're paying for, you know. But a lot of it's just, you really have to have really strong workflows, even more so than you do if you're just local and just working from home or wherever all the time, you know. So you really have to get stuff done quick. You can't sit around and play on Facebook or get distracted by something, you know. You just have to get stuff done.
Do you have any workflow tips that are your favorite to saving a ton of time?
Making lists. So like every single thing as far as what I do in my business has a workflow. So like an email, for instance, right when I get an inquiry, there's a whole workflow that goes into that, you know, as far as like the email template that gets sent out, when I follow up and the different ways I follow up and things like that. So there's a whole system and workflow that goes into that. There's a whole system and workflow that goes into like my backup process or how I do albums, or I mean, literally every part of my business has a listed workflow to it.
And you just build all of that within Sprout Studio.
The large majority of it is all done through that. So like as far as like say someone, when somebody books a wedding, there's a whole workflow that goes into it, and a lot of it's automated, you know. So like when somebody books me, like I have a number of emails that automatically go out on how they access their system and what their password and stuff like that is. There's one that goes out like that's like a wedding day questionnaire that they complete about the wedding. There's a like a love story questionnaire that's all about their relationship and about them and stuff like that. Yeah, so that stuff is kind of all automated. And then there's like an automatic task list that will pop up. So in like 3 weeks, maybe I need to schedule their engagement session. Well, Sprout will actually tell me through an email. It emails me and saying, hey, this person needs to set up their engagement session. So I know to contact that person to follow up with them about that. And if they don't follow up and get back to me within a certain period of time about that, it will automatically send me another one to say, hey, follow up with this person again. So I'm not having to constantly remember, oh, I need to follow up with these people and those people and so on, right? It does it all for me. And I just, when I get the email, I just go out and do that task, right?
Okay, so this is going to elaborate a little bit more on the whole destination, how you got started. So how did you book your first destination wedding, and how would you recommend people find their first destination couple?
That's funny. So actually, I did an interview a couple of months ago, and the whole interview was about whether or not you should work for free in photography, right? So a large part of my story is about that. And I kind of have mixed ideas on whether you should work for free or not. But to get my very first wedding, or I guess destination wedding, what I did was offered completely free wedding photography for a very specific couple. And because at that point, look, I don't have any kind of portfolio for destination work. I don't have any experience. I don't have any proof that I can even do destination work, right? So it's a huge risk for a couple to take that on, right? So my thought process was, if I offered for free, then that's a really huge advantage. And kind of, I guess, what would you go, bait, I guess, you know, to get right. them to hire me, right?
Bait.
That's what I did, is I offered it completely for free. And in exchange, I would have all of that, you know, work to use for my portfolio and stuff like that. So some people, you know, they might think, well, you know, you should never work for free. It hurts the industry. It does this, that, and the other. But I'm not looking at it as I'm doing anything for free. I'm looking at it as a marketing investment in myself and in my business, right? So just like people would pay, like, the Knot or something, you know, to book more weddings, instead of paying the Knot, I'm paying me, you know, I'm spending a little bit of time and a little bit of my money to invest back into my business, for marketing, you know, that's all I'm doing is, and building stuff up for marketing purposes.
Hey, Raymond here. We'll get back to the show in just a moment, but let me ask you, do you want to take images that stand out? Images that make people say, oh, wow, that is beautiful. I want them to photograph me. Or do you want people to take advantage of you, asking you to shoot for free simply because, well, they know that you have a camera? I think the answer is pretty obvious here. You want others to love what you do. So why are you not valuing yourself by not charging for your work? Let me show you how to earn your first $100 in photography and build your confidence absolutely free with my step-by-step guide that you can download over at firstphotoclient.com. Don't get stuck in the friend with a camera zone and don't miss out on another dollar. Download your free step-by-step guide over at firstphotoclient.com. Now, let's get back to today's interview. So did you just have a blog post that said, hey, free wedding photography, just contact me below? Or were you reaching out to specific couples?
Yeah, no, not really. So at that time, I mean, that was like maybe a year after I owned that camera, you know, so I'm still kind of in that poor man's like Craigslist kind of era.
Yeah.
Right. So I used Craigslist and Facebook and social media and stuff and just said, hey, you know, I'm trying to get a destination wedding. I will do it completely for free. But it had very, very specific like terms and stuff about that, right? So I'm looking for a very specific location. I'm looking for a very specific couple, and a few other things for the marketing purposes, right? Like I don't want to just do any wedding or, you know, any location, you know, because like my idea was is I needed something very kind of beachy and tropical, you know, in a sense, because when
the
people
idea
think
of the destination wedding,
exactly. Yeah. So overall, I mean, when people think destination wedding, they always think some grand beach, even though the majority of destination weddings have nothing to do with beaches. But that was the idea for the marketing, right? So my very first destination wedding was in Puerto Rico. So that was like the perfect location because, you know, that's a really popular destination wedding area is Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. And so after I interviewed the couple and stuff and made sure it was going to be a good fit, you know, for me and what I wanted, then that's when I gave them the free photography, right? In exchange, they not only did I do the wedding for free, but they had to pay for my travel. So it's like, I'm not paying for my travel. They had to pay for all my travel and I wanted to be there for at least 4 days. So not only was I there obviously for the wedding, but they had to pay for 3 additional days where I was there just for me. And during that time I was working, you know, I was exploring and taking photos and stuff like that for additional blog posts and stuff.
I think there's a lot of great tips in there that a lot of people will be able to use if destination weddings is what they want to do. So how do you prepare for a shoot if you've never been to the location before?
The exact same way I would do it locally. Like, I don't actually like to do venue walkthroughs or anything like that. And that's just a personal thing. And mainly I do that because I want to go in with fresh eyes and fresh creativity, right? I don't want to pre-plan or and pre-prepare for anything, because in reality, like, even if you went to the like a venue walkthrough and it was perfectly sunny and all these amazing spots, this looks so incredible, and you had this huge plan of all these places you're going to shoot portraits and do this and do that, and then the next day it rains. You know, none of that even applies anymore. So it's just a complete waste of time. So like when I first started weddings, I mean, I did anything to prepare because I had no clue what I was even doing the majority of the time, you know. But nowadays, I mean, I like just walking into a place and just setting up shop and doing my thing, you know. So I guess that kind of comes with experience. But now it's just, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's in a cave or it's on a beach, you know, it doesn't matter to me what the lighting conditions are, what the weather is or anything else. I mean, I literally have shot, you know, weddings and hurricanes. Like I literally did that last year. I shot a wedding in a hurricane, you know, and how would you even prepare for that?
Yeah.
You know, but I did it, and it turned out to be one of my favorite weddings of all of last year, just because of that, you know?
So let's say that you have like your engagement session, you got to fly out to your engagement session in San Francisco. How do you plan where the photos are going to be taken beforehand? There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
A lot of that is how I do my engagement sessions. So I don't do engagement sessions like a lot of people think, where you show up at the pretty park and you take pretty pictures of pretty people. Like, that's just not my style. So all of my engagement sessions are actually based on storytelling. So they're just like weddings, you know, it's just a story, right? So it's based on a lot of different things. It could be based on like how the couple met, what their favorite hobbies are, what they like to do for fun, their favorite locations and things like that. For example, I did an engagement session in New York City in December, and their entire engagement session was based on their real life, right? So we went to like this diner that they go to every single Sunday and have breakfast every single Sunday. So that's just a really important place for them, right? And that doesn't seem like a typical place you would do engagement photos. But as part of a storytelling aspect, it's amazing, right? And it's really unique, and it's a lot more fun and exciting to the couple. And the couple really appreciates those photos more so than if they went to a pretty park and took photos, you know? So it's even easier to sell like prints and wall art and albums and stuff, because the photos have even more meaning to them, right? That's how the whole engagement session is done, is based on that. So it doesn't matter to me if I've never been to these places, because the couple has. It's based on them and their story, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't have to plan anything. They're doing the planning for me, and it's based off their real life. So it's just more fun and exciting to them to actually come up with these ideas for the engagement session. And I will help them. I'll walk through and give them ideas, and we work on the planning of the locations and stuff like that. And that's part of the experience, is I'm building a very close relationship with a lot of these people. And a lot of times I'm actually staying at their house, you know? So it's like a really tight relationship and a trusting relationship, right?
I feel like that's so weird, but if it works, then that's awesome, and it saves you and them a ton of money in, I guess, hotel fees. So
it was amazing. There was nothing that felt uncomfortable about it for either one of us, you know, just because of our personalities and interests and things that we had in common, you know. But overall, I mean, it doesn't always work out like that, but when it does, it's really good, because it does save a ton of money, you know.
And it's got to make them feel a whole lot looser, instead of like, oh, this is like, it's got to take away some of that that nervousness.
No, it totally does, and that's kind of part of the whole purpose of the engagement session, the whole experience in itself. And I don't know, I think with destination weddings in general, there's a lot more distrust and relationship building, you know, involved.
There's got to be.
Yeah, just because of the nature of what it is, you know. Some people look at that as a waste of time because maybe you're not getting paid for all that. But I look at it as an investment in the relationship, which overall will make me money in the long run.
Right? Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So how much gear do you bring with you when you travel? Do you bring like an entire studio's worth of gear packed in a suitcase? Or are you like one messenger bag, one camera, one lens? Let's do this.
When I first started, I did take probably a lot more than I do now, way more than I do now, just because I didn't really have the experience at the time. But now I've really simplified every single thing in my kit. Even for local weddings, I shoot with the exact same stuff I do for destination weddings at this point. And yeah, basically everything will fit into one TSA approved like think tank rolling like bag that goes on the plane with me. And I have one messenger bag and that's it. So as far as gear itself, I mean, it's like usually, you know, I have 2 to 3 cameras. I primarily shoot with just a 35 and 85 prime lens, although I will bring backups. So I'll have like a 24 to 70 and a 70 to 200 as backups to those just in case something happens. I shoot a lot with MagMod. So like all my off-camera lighting and stuff is all done with MagMod, which all fits in that little camera bag. My light stands fit in that little camera bag. And yeah, all my clothes, like literally everything all fits in this camera bag and the messenger bag. That's it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you're not bringing like studio strobes and big gear like that. That's good. Yeah. Keeping it light is definitely got to be the way to keep up the longevity and make it last for sure.
Dude, you have to, man. I'm telling you, if you try to carry all these bags, it's exhausting to carry these bags.
So what do you think is the biggest misconception that people have about being a destination wedding photographer?
From a photographer standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, our audience is photographers, so yeah, from a photographer standpoint.
I guess just how glamorous it probably all seems, you know? Just, I guess people just look at, you know, Instagram and Facebook and to see all these, like, crazy beaches, and they're like, oh, they're going to Maui or to this, that, and the other, you know? And there is some of that to an extent, but it's not like I'm flying first class, dude. Like, I'm literally...
No private jets.
On the cheapest plane. I mean, if I could, I would probably get checked into baggage, you know, and just ride that way, you know? Just, and yeah, it's just a lot of work. I mean, there's way more work and stress and logistic stuff and just overall stress in general that goes into it, you know, more so than a local wedding. So it's definitely not peaches and creams with unicorns.
Sure. Unicorns. Yeah. I know that you are like a backup junkie. Obviously, you talked about your efficiency and workflows. You talked about organization. So backing up the photos has got to be a huge, huge part of your workflow. So how does that work being a destination wedding photographer and then coming back home and, you know, mixing two computers together? Obviously, we don't have to go like super in detail about this, but just kind of like a general idea of how it works.
So it works the exact same way as it does locally for me. So literally as I'm shooting a wedding day, through the transitions of the wedding day. So like, say we're going from getting ready into like ceremony and first look and stuff like that. I'm actually taking my cards and my camera and I'm running a backup with my laptop and an external hard drive while I keep shooting other stuff. And I'm doing that as we like switch in from, let's say, the ceremony to the reception, and just different parts of the day. I'm actually backing up cards all throughout the day. So by the end of the evening, when I get like to say to the reception time, I already have three backups at that point. So I have the cards that I shot on, I have an external that I'm working from that has a backup on it, and then there's another external that actually has a backup of that external drive, right? So there's two external drives and then the cards. So there's three backups throughout the entire day of everything that I'm shooting. And then there's also obviously a fourth card, like I'm shooting dual card slots. So there's a fourth card that has a backup of those photos immediately as I'm shooting. And that really kind of serves two purposes. So one, it's making backups for me. Obviously, that's a good thing. But it's also setting me up so I can prepare for the same day slideshow, because I do same day slideshows at all my weddings. So it's preparing for that as I'm going throughout the day too. And so it's the same whether I'm working locally or a destination wedding. And then if it's destination, a lot of times I'm working on the plane and stuff like that. So I'm actually culling, editing, and doing the blog post, the album design, and everything on the plane on the way home. So by the time I get home, I'm done with all of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. So obviously when you get home, now all that you have to do is just transfer the photos onto your main workhorse computer and then just archive them at that point?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, it's literally I just drag it from that main external hard drive I'm working from on the go and just drop it onto my external hard drive that I'm working at home, and it does its thing, and that's it.
Okay. If you could go back in time to when you first traded that toolbox, you said, for that camera, and tell, knowing what you know now, what would you tell young Matt with that brand new used camera in his hand about photography?
Man, that's a really good question, man. I guess I would just say work harder, work faster. Yeah.
Definitely with workflows. Again, that totally fits into your.
Yeah, I would say that was really important. I didn't do that really good until probably almost the end of my second year is when I really started getting into just workflows and just kind of nailing everything down. I mean, before then, I was trying to figure everything out. I mean, trying to learn how to use the camera. I was trying to figure out how to book jobs, how to make money, how to run the business. You know, so it was just a lot of things changed really, really quickly during those first couple of years. And then after you start doing it for a while, things become a little bit more like solid because it's like you've had the practice, you've had the experience, you've had the good stuff, you've had a lot of bad stuff, you know, and you've learned from all of that, right? Yes, I guess fail soon and fail fast. That's what I would say.
I don't think that's what a lot of people want to hear, but I think that's a really important rule for them to hear.
I think if more people understood that and did that, because, I mean, as humans, that's how we learn. We learn from failure, you know? Like, we learn from success, too, but you really learn from failure, you know? Like, it's just like when you put your hand on a hot stove, you learn real quick not to do that again, you know? But if you put it on a cold stove, like, you don't necessarily learn, you know, not to put it up there again, right?
Even though that is a success.
Yeah, I guess. But that's kind of how I'm looking at it, you know? So it's like when you fail, like, and you're going to fail. That's just part of life, right? That's part of anything that we do. But it's how you react to the failures and what you learn from them that really matters the most.
Yeah. So I got to ask this, otherwise the listeners are going to hate me. What was the biggest bonus that you ever, like, received, the biggest perk of being a destination wedding photographer that you've ever experienced?
Oh, dang, that's a good question. Well, I guess I got a couple of them. So last time I was in New York, one of the hotels up there gave me 3 free nights. That was pretty baller. One, because I've stayed there a few other times, but 2, because I tweeted something out about their customer service. That was really positive, not just some negative thing that most people do. And they really appreciated that. So they actually just gave me 3 free nights. And I thought that was pretty cool considering the price of hotels up there. And then I guess it's, a lot of times, yeah, I guess it's some of the places I get to travel to. Like, I'm going to Hawaii. Like, so I've been to every single state. I've been to Mexico and Canada with the exception of Hawaii and Alaska. So those are the only 2 states I haven't been to. So in April, I'm going to Hawaii, and that will check one more off the list, and all I need is Alaska, right? So I think that's super cool. And, like, my wife originally was going to go with me, and it was going to be so I was going to be working for about 4 days, and then I was going to be there just kind of chilling for a vacation for a week after that. But it just didn't work out as far as, you know, our family life and stuff goes. So
but still,
now I'm just going
the possibility that that was there has got to be a giant perk.
Yeah, that was definitely a huge perk.
Yeah, right. Well, Matt, that's all the questions that I got for you today. Why don't you let everybody, all of our listeners, know where they can find you online?
So you can check out pretty much all my work at MatthewDruin.com. That's my website, and you can see my blog and all that sort of thing there. Facebook is Matthew Druin Photography, and then Twitter is Matthew Druin. Instagram is Matt Druin. I'm on Tumblr, YouTube, you know, all that good stuff.
Not on Snapchat though, huh?
No, I'm not a Snapchatter. No, is that what you call him, a Snapchatter?
I don't know. I guess. I don't know. I took a long break from Snapchat. I got to the point to where I was, like, really enjoying Snapchat, and it was actually kind of beneficial because brides were watching my snaps as my family life, and it was, like you said, it was building that trust without directly influencing them, I suppose. And it was really working out pretty good, but then with the birth of our daughter, ever since then, life just got in the way and hectic, and I just never got back into it, but I really should.
Well, now you can get on like Instagram. You can do that now on there and Facebook, yeah. I guess. And
right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Snapchat's fun. But regardless, I will be sure to add links to all of your social platforms and your website and your blog and everything to the show notes of this episode so that anybody can find you online if they want to do so. But Matt, that's it, man. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I can't wait to hear about this first Alaska wedding that you're going to book soon. I know you are.
I'm hoping. If somebody's out there and is getting married in Alaska, man, hook me up and let me know. But yeah, thanks so much for having me on, man. It's a real honor.
My head hurts. My head hurts right now. Everything that Matt talked about, all of his actionable tips that you could be doing right away on how he became a destination wedding photographer, how he was able to market himself as a destination wedding photographer, of why it's okay to shoot for free when you first start off, so that you can become a destination wedding photographer. Everything that he shared. Oh my gosh, my brain, it hurts, but in a great way, because I have so many great ideas that I can implement, right? And everybody can. No matter if you want to become a destination wedding photographer or not, you can implement something that Matt talked about today, whether it be a workflow or a backup strategy or just how to blog correctly to attract the brides that you want. That's it. There's so much great information in this episode. Matt, if you're listening, and I know that you are, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I had a blast. I hope that you had a blast. And again, thank you for coming on and sharing everything that you did. Guys, listeners, that's all that I got. We packed the beginning of this episode full of a ton of great information, so I'm going to leave this kind of done right now. So I want you guys to get out there, get shooting, have fun. Also, I want all y'all to get on Instagram, follow the Beginner Photography Podcast at Beginner Photo Podcast, and follow along on our daily...